We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to another show, which this week comes to you from London's Westminster Theatre. Before we meet today's teams, let's welcome Brian Perkins, who has a story supplied by M. O'Connor of County Wicklow from the Irish Times.
Two fishermen who crept into a minibus and attempted to steal it failed to notice it was full of passengers sitting behind them.
Well, one of our teams knows how they feel. Please welcome, on my right, Private Eyes Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Meanwhile, not much gets past the pair on my left. A big hand, please, for Gillian Reynolds and Alan Corran. Round one begins with news of a great sporting event.
The Camanachd Association presents the cup final of the Shinty Championship of Scotland, sponsored by the Glenmorangie Distillery. Throw up at 3 p.m.
Many thanks to Jim Corini of Wiltshire for the invitation. Richard, what was the biggest story you missed this week?
I'm afraid Mr. Ingrams has been taken ill. He is no longer team captain. His place has been taken by a more right-wing man. Actually, that's not possible. Richard!
Well, it's too early to say at this moment in time exactly what the story is to which you're referring. I think we've got to wait and see what it is, quite frankly. I think we've got to wait and see how things are going to work out before we can give you any very definite answer to the way things are moving at this moment of time. Wouldn't you agree?
That is a very good point, Richard, because I think it is far too early to say how things are moving.
I'm glad you agree with me over that.
At this point
yes.
in time.
And
can
now,
we go over to...
Now back to the chairman.
Barry.
To the chairman.
Well, thank you for that. You're absolutely right. You get your 2 marks. These were the events not surrounding Mikhail Gorbachev, who was forced to extend his holiday for a few days when he became ill with a nasty attack of the Black Sea Trots. Ian, who is demanding its slice of his inaction?
Is this a reference to various publishers?
No, it isn't.
Over filmmakers?
Gillian,
we're of one mind here. Are we not,
well,
Alan?
We have two half minds. Whether they make one mind, I'm not sure.
Oh, be exponential.
Speak for England, Gillian.
Is it not Mr. McCarthy? And
almost
his,
certainly.
And his tax demand?
Quite.
It is.
And his poll tax demand?
It's the first thing
and
the
his
inland
water rates
think
demand.
Of, isn't it? It really is. Rudolph S. flies in from Scotland and they say, I'm sorry, you haven't filled in a form for 1923. They are amazing people.
Yes, it's absolutely. You've got the points, actually. This refers to the Inland Revenue, who are now considering the issue of a demand for £32,000 in back taxes, because the salary of Mr. McCarthy was paid during his captivity and is classed as unearned income.
He should go to the Queen's accountant, shouldn't he?
He should indeed. In between taking down a yellow ribbon and replacing it with red tape, a revenue spokesman explained that if you continue to be paid while not actually doing anything, you are liable. In which case they must be dreading their next assessments round at the Foreign Office. Gillian, you were brilliant on that. How about this? What has Tarzan got planned for the urban jungle?
Oh, I think this is... I detect a spread here, a spread to the east, along both sides of the Thames, yea, unto Thurrock and beyond. Is this Mr. Heseltine's brilliant vision of Docklands only more so?
Yes.
Where to put more London, as if London needed more? What should we do with Mr. Heseltine? Should we send him to Russia?
They'd only send him back. It's hopeless. Yes, you're absolutely right. This refers to Michael Heseltine's plan for the creation of a new linear city downstream from London. The environmentally unfriendly secretary envisages up to a dozen new Heseltowns, stretching 30 miles along both banks of the Thames. This punch below the green belt is designed to meet the South East housing demand, and more importantly, the Conservatives' demand for another 12 seats in the Commons. Alan, your question. What do you think happens next?
Kevin, four little girls, four little girls get bigger every day. Thank heaven, four little girls, they grow up in the most delightful way. Those little eyes so helpless and appealing, One day we'll flash and send you crashing through the ceiling.
What happens is Esther Rampson arrests him.
I think it's about the mayor of Cannes.
It is about the mayor of Cannes.
Who, I was going to say must be feeling a right tit, but it will be entirely inappropriate. He is trying to stop people shopping with bare breasts, or for bare breasts, and he doesn't want them doing it on the beach. And he's invoked an old law to stop nudists in Cannes and people going to shops and touching things they don't intend buying. Do you remember, if you don't want the fruit, don't muck it about?
Don't want the box, don't muck it about.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, you're absolutely right. This refers to the mayor of Cannes, Michel Mouillet, who has confined topless bathing to the beach. Women who offend decency and morality by being topless in the street will be offered a free T-shirt, as well as a warning from a police officer, a member of an elite undercover squad. And if they still dress down after being dressed down, they'll be fined 75 francs. Oh. And the scores at the end
it's
of
really
the
really going to bother Madonna, isn't it? 75 franc fine. Wow.
Anyway, let me give you the scores at the end of the first round. Richard and Ian are 3. How, I do not know. But Alan and Gillian are in the lead with 5. Round 2 starts with an odd story from The Guardian.
The government's largest building project, the £450 million British Library, is facing yet another delay after a decade of problems. Plans to move 10 million books to the new headquarters at St Pancras in London next month are to be put back because the high-technology 300-kilometre mobile shelving system, which will take 2 years to fill, keeps jamming and flinging the books to the ground instead of storing them.
Jolly handy, that. Anyway, many thanks to Ronald and Maureen Hind of Hertfordshire for that item. Richard, who believes charity should begin away from home?
Very, very good question, yeah.
Charity away from home, royalty of a kind.
Royalty. This is Mrs. Thatcher, the royalty question.
No.
We should have given more money to...
Even more loyal, even more royal than Mrs. Thatcher.
Don't be silly, Barry. Princess Michael of Kent.
Right.
That was a joke, as indeed is she. She thinks we should give money to right-wing groups in Germany.
No.
Distressed members of the royal family who can't get their books published anymore.
Anybody going to give me a proper answer to this?
No.
No, okay, don't blame me.
She's written another book.
No.
Someone else has written a book and she's claimed to write it.
No. This refers to Prince Michael of Kent, the royal who looks like an old German Kaiser and whose wife speaks like one, who's off with his family on a £22,000 freebie holiday to New Orleans, care of the Windsor Court Hotel. At least it makes a change from going care of the Windsor Court Civil List. All this is in return for the Kents appearing at a charity ball. The ball's organisers explained that they thought the two Michaels would act like a magnet, although whether attracting or repelling, they didn't say. And here's your question, Ian. Who was taken out, outed, and put back?
Oh, yes, this is a great German funeral. Frederick the Great.
Right.
Who was removed from his grave.
Yes.
And buried back in a united Germany.
Right.
Next to his whippets. He wanted to be next to his whippets.
Yes, absolutely right.
What sort of people keep whippet bones for 200 years? I mean, it's extraordinary. They've still got the whippets.
And Helmut Kohl went to the funeral as a friend of the family. slightly pushing it when it's a dead royal family, yeah. Isn't it?
And so did a lot of homosexualists. That's what your question is about.
Yes, indeed.
Because they claimed that the late Frederick the Great was one of their number. As indeed he was. It's all in Macaulay's histories.
But did he number Voltaire among his lovers?
Well, I don't think I go along as far as that, but he's no doubt he got up to no good with various other people. It was all a long time ago.
Yes, thank God he
Does
won't
that
sue
excuse
us.
It?
I'll tell you what I have written down. This is the second funeral of the late great Frederick of Prussia. 200 years late, whose remains, following German reunification, were taken from his temporary resting place in the West and reburied at Potsdam alongside his pet dogs, as the soldier king and Hitler role model was reunified with these whippets. Gay rights activists took the opportunity to out him, obviously having missed him the first time around. German officials pointed out that old Fred was a great philosopher who liked nothing better than being tucked up in bed with Voltaire, or failing that, one of his books.
Appalling slur.
Appalling slur, however. Gillian, see if you recognise this.
I say, bring back the interlude.
Right.
Those wonderful tumbling kittens and the potter's wheel and the waves dashing up against the shore. It was wonderful. You couldn't go and put the kettle on in the middle of those like you can in the middle of adverts.
That's right.
And yeah. They're coming back. They're bringing it back for a night of televisual magic.
That's right.
They are, aren't they?
They are.
Along with the Grove family.
That's right.
With Dirty Den and everybody. I can't wait. Modern television is so horrible. Bring back old television, I say. And the BBC has read my thoughts. A tribute to Lime Grove will follow shortly, with all old programmes, including the interlude.
If you're listening to the repeat, she means I couldn't wait, because it will have happened by then. Because it's all day Monday that this dreary tripe is being trundled up West 14.
Yes, oh, would you like your question now, Gillian?
I want an extra point for getting the question before the question, please.
Yes, Barry. I'll give you a full marks of it. It's all about the BBC's 13-hour tribute to the now-defunct Lime Grove Studios, which is being screened on Bank Holiday Monday. So archaeologists and television addicts will be able to enjoy old favourites such as Muffin the Mule and Billy Bunter. The modern viewer is not forgotten, however, and fans of Neighbours can see its 1950s equivalent with the return of the Potter's Wheel. Alan. Alan, who's in training to boldly go where no European has gone before?
I think this is the one about the Walloon, isn't it? Moon's a Walloon. We're supposed to laugh at Belgium, because it doesn't do anything except produce whittling statues and chocolate, probably from the same source. But, in fact, they're heavily into outer space, Belgium being enormously small and very crowded, which is why they have the world's smallest cabbages. The sprout was invented so that Belgian housewives could get home from the supermarket without knocking one another over. And being this enormously crowded place, they've decided to move into outer space, and a Walloon is being trained. He's going to be the first Walloon in space.
Right.
They're waiting for him
absolutely
on Mars.
Right.
They've read about this. Yes. Oh, you're a Belgian, are you?
Yes, you'll be known
as Mars
Empties. Mars Empties.
Give us a bar of chocolate.
The answer, as you so rightly say, Alan, is the answer is Belgium's desperate attempt to become famous as something other than the country that armies go through on their way to invade somewhere else. By setting up astronaut training facilities at Zaventem Airport, they hope to join the space race, that is, the race to get out of the space on the map marked Belgium. Respective Belgian spaceman, or hot air walloons, can now make serious preparations for the big trip to the moon. At least living in Belgium makes acclimatization less of a problem. The moon's got pretty much the same amount of atmosphere. Isn't that libelous? But at least we've come to the end of another round, and the scores are Richard and Ian 5, but Alan and Gillian galloping beautifully into the lead with 9. Well played. Round 3 starts with encouraging news for Reliant Robin fans.
A Reliant Robin driver who was chased by police across 17 miles of snowbound countryside was convicted of reckless driving by Thetford magistrates yesterday. Police in a Land Rover failed to keep up with the yellow M-registration three-wheeler after its driver, 20-year-old Jason Mann, made off when they tried to stop his car in the early hours of February the 9th. Mann finally gave himself up after the Reliant Robin's distinctive tire tracks led officers to his front door.
Richard, when might diamonds not have been a best friend? Scientific question?
Scientific
not unrelated question. To Canada.
I thought a lot of interesting things going on in Russia this week.
No, it was all in Canada.
Oh, was it? I'm sorry, I missed...
Big coup in Canada. Apparently the Premier of Canada fell ill.
Yeah, and was replaced by Mark Stein, I believe.
He was.
That's
and
incredible.
Mark Stein lasted 3 days, in which he told stories of the backwoods.
Good heavens.
And about men with checkered shirts. It was very, very interesting indeed.
Yes. Well, it sounds tremendously interesting, but I think it is too early to tell at this moment how things are going to work out.
I've got Mark Stein on the line now.
Come in, Mark. Can you hear me? Can I start with you? Can I go to you first?
I'm sorry, we've just lost Mark. So here's someone in a hotel in Cyprus.
Good evening.
How do you feel it's going?
Well, I think it is a bit early days yet, and we've got to see how this Stein affair is going to work out.
I hope a lot of people are going to die rather horribly.
Well,
because otherwise a lot of journalists will be very disappointed.
I think that's true, and I think it's looking at it... at the moment in time, it's a bit too early to tell. So I'm going back to Barrytook now. Barrytook.
I'm going to tell you the answer. This concerns scientists in Canada who have discovered microscopically small diamonds alongside the remains of dinosaurs, prompting the theory that they died out after a meteorite storm. Either that or the Tyrannosaurus Rex was a regular customer of Ratner's.
They were Canadian dinosaurs.
Oh, shut your
gob.
Now, Ian, listen to this. And the question is, who had heartbreaking news for the little people?
I think you'll find, if I may come in here... I'm thinking of what's been in the Daily Telegraph about the fact that if you're small, as some people are, compared to other people...
What sort of people do you think?
Small in stature, but perfectly formed.
You are extremely smart.
You are less likely to suffer
a heart attack.
More.
When I said more, I'm sorry, I was misheard there.
What, than sort of tall people? With loud ties on?
Yes. Even though they may be under a great deal of stress for one reason or another.
What, like not knowing the answers?
Yes, exactly.
I think they're probably very likely to die in about a minute. This story is complete drivel.
It is. It's all in the Telegraph.
This is Dr. John Yarnell, who claims to have established that short people carry an increased risk of sustaining heart attacks, and so are recommended to take more exercise, like not using the lift to get to the dinner table. And to watch what they eat if they can get up that high. Gillian, which new club is planning to scale new heights?
The only new club I can think of is the club to get the great crested newts of Norwich under the motorway. But that's depths, not heights.
This is a heightist story.
This is a heightist story. Refer it to Ingram. He's the resident heightist.
There is a 6'8" man. That is about all I know. But he has a large heart and will live for a very long time. And he's very unhappy because people make heightist jokes like, is it cold up there? And what a fool you are for trying to do a club for very tall people because nobody's bloody interested, you self-seeking publicist.
Is he from Canada, by any chance?
No, he's not.
Oh.
And he hasn't got 12 toes either, like Marilyn Monroe, which is also in the Telegraph this week. It would be terrible to be 6'8" and have 12 toes. He wouldn't know which club to join.
It wouldn't have a large membership, that's for sure.
Well, you'd need 12 toes, probably, to keep you stable in a high wind. That will get me out of his club for a start. Anyway, I don't know why, if you're 6'8", you're sensitive. If people say nasty things, you just tread on them. I can't remember this man's name, but he's extremely tall.
I used to be called Lofty when I was in the army.
Gosh, that is interesting.
coming out at last, eh?
He was actually in the Gurkhas, which explains why they called him Lofty.
This refers to
a club for tall.
Shut
people.
Up. Yes, it is. It is. It refers. Let me tell you what it refers to. This refers to Britain's first tall persons club, which has been founded by Phil Heinkry. That's the man's name.
Going to join a silly name club anymore.
That's
now.
Right.
Look, he's not going to be able to get through life at all.
He's not.
12
anyway,
toes
this is
and
Mr.
his silly name,
Cry.
His snow-covered head.
At 6'8", Mr. Heinkry hopes to provide help and counselling for the estimated 500,000 British people above average height. Alan, what has been licked by the recession?
This is a stamp joke. Did you see the great stamp, King Mbatsi of Swaziland? That was there was an in the audience. He's issued a stamp showing two friends he picked up when he was hitchhiking. And it's a one they've done. He's done a commemorative stamp, Swaziland 2 cent. And it's got a caption on it. And it says, King Mbazi united with two old mates. I don't think it's that one. I think that stamps have done very well out of the slump.
It's not that sort of stamp, Alan. Stamps is right, but...
Oh.
Another sort of stamp that was more popular back in the 60s.
Canadian.
Green stamps.
Gillian has
Green stamps have folded yet again, not for the first time in their history.
No, true.
I thought they'd passed away years ago. Do you remember green stamps? Did you ever have them, Alan?
My lighter. I got my lighter on green stamps. It cost me £300,000. That's the most expensive lighter in the world. £300,000 and a whole lung blown out as a result of it. Thank you, Sperry and Rand, if that's what... Or Sperry and Hutchinson, weren't they? S&H. What are these stamps?
Green stamps were trading incentives. Shops would offer you green stamps if you spent their money in your money in their store. For every pound you spent, you got 5 green stamps. And then you went home and you stuck them in your little book. And for those of us over 50, and this is what it was like in the olden days, we used to sit round the fire of a night, licking our green stamps into our books.
Watching that potter's wheel on the
and
telly.
Watching that potter's wheel.
You're absolutely right.
Gosh, things were better then.
Nowadays you have Dennis Potter's wheel.
A lot of naked women with
yes,
their hands on
don't
it.
Don't need.
This refers to the Greenshield Trading Stamps Company, which announced that it was to cease trading. The stamp became a cornerstone of British life in the 1960s, when the most popular item was a Kenwood food mixer, or a peerage under Harold Wilson's administration. The company modified its range of gifts in the 90s when the Kenwood food mixer was replaced by the private hip operation. And that's that one. And we've come to the end of another round, and the scores are still unremarkably Richard and Ian 6, but Alan and Gillian in the lead with 11. Time now to leap into the last round with this stunning tale of life down under.
Drinkers in a New Zealand pub are donning Velcro suits to bounce off a mini trampoline and stick themselves to a Velcro-covered wall. The aim of the game is for people to race up and splat themselves on the wall with their feet as high off the ground as possible, said Jeremy Bayliss, owner of the Criterion Hotel in the North Island town of Napier. A record height of 15 feet has been set since the wall-sticking craze began earlier this year. Minders are always on hand to catch any rebounds, but in most cases, contestants stick so hard, they have to be peeled off.
Well, there's not a lot to do in the evening in New Zealand, but many thanks to Mrs. S. Quarterman of Solihull for supplying us with that from the Birmingham Evening Mail, of course. Richard, here's some music for you. Well, that was, of course, Luciano Pavarotti. And the question is, who has found an original way to earn a tenner?
I thought that was Robert Maxwell singing at his historic concert. This has been a tremendously historic week, as you know.
Yes.
The whole of history has been changed before our eyes. And everything is back to where it was before it started. That is by the way. But as for this £10 note that you mentioned...
They must have marked it a range of Pavarotti somethings. Pavarotti furters or something like that. I mean,
well, yes, you're on the right lines, but it's much more personal than that. And
oh,
sillier.
They've sold his pancreas. You can win it. You take along a book of green stamps.
Yes, 4 million green stamps.
Get his glottis and two little hammers, and you can play Ness and Dormer on the great man's body.
That's one that we'd all buy, the Pavarotti diet. I think
gain pounds.
It all refers to Jeff Harding, who is the world's first Pavarottiogram. How about that, then? The 21-stone singing bellygram turns up at functions, armed with chocolates and a bottle of champagne, and bursts into a version of Nessun Dorma. This act costs £45. The suspenders and the strippogram routine doubles the price.
I knew it would be in a historic week.
But not as historic as this, eh? Ian, your question now. Who was faced by the horns of a dilemma?
There's a priest in Spain
yes.
who fights bulls.
Yes.
He's been told, you can't fight bulls anymore.
Right.
Because they're a sort of politically correct church in Spain now.
Right.
So he's not allowed to fight bulls, so he doesn't. And there's your big August story.
Were they, if may I ask, were they papal bulls?
No.
Oh, dear. Alan, your question now. Which old sort is raising the blood pressure of the men from the ministry?
This must be about a sailor.
It is.
This must be about an ancient sailor who is bothering the Ministry of Defence because he's got this very old boat with holes in it.
That's right.
And he wants to go to sea in a sieve. He is a jumbly sailor, and they won't let him go. He wants to sail somewhere in this old tub with another lunatic. And the Ministry of Boats won't let him go because he's got holes in and he will sink. And they will have to do a lot of paperwork, which will upset them deeply.
Yes, got it. Before I give you the final scores, it's time for the team cuttings. Richard, have you got a cutting for us?
As it so happens, yes, in this historic week, where you've heard so much about the historic events that have been taking place, from a paper in New York, it says, the deceased requested that there be no flowers due to her allergies.
Very good. Ian?
This is from The Guardian, and it says, the European is thought to be losing about £1 million a week, although Mr. Maxwell says that it is doing very well. This assertion, mad earlier this year...
Gillian, have you a cutting for us?
Mine is a wistful tale from the always astringent and ever-readable Daily Telegraph Peterborough column, and it's about Colonel Clifton Jeffries, who's just retired from running the Countrywear Field Sport shop in Ballater, where he used to supply the royal family with their clothes and their fishing flies and so on. And he'll be much missed, apparently, and his emporium. Ballater bed and breakfaster, John Finney, a regular customer, says, Prince Charles always used to drop in for a chat when he was up here. It was a very friendly shop, and the Colonel's leaving is a great loss. Another patron adds, I've long admired the Colonel's tackle.
Alan.
I have something, Barry, from the Brighton Argus.
Oh, good.
Mr. Herriot did not at first realise his car had been stolen. He was alerted to this by his sharp-eyed 5-year-old son, William, who, as though he were walking back from the beach, suddenly pointed at a fast-moving vehicle and said, Oh, look, Dad, there's a car with the same number plate as ours.
Well, that brings the contest more or less to a close. The final scores are, unsurprisingly, Richard and Ian, 7, but Alan and Gillian, twice as good, with 14. This week's winners. Before we leave you, we've just time for an advertisement seen in the British Medical Journal by Mr. M. Lambert of London.
Study course for rural doctors, October the 16th to the 18th. Topics to include diabetes, cardiac care, problems in practice management, and safe use of chainsaws.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Gillian Reynolds, Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Patterson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Diane Messias.